In conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
This hour on a Thursday, middle hour, we kick off our shoes, get ourselves a cup of tea, get our feet up, and have a nice leisurely conversation with my special guest in the studio, who this week is an old friend of mine, John Hollis Davis. Good afternoon, John.
Oh, hi, Dean. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, well, it's lovely to see you. Looking well. Looking well. Have you been away?
Yes, went to south of Spain. Very Spanish it was.
Yeah.
Not many English people there.
Ah,
it was wonderful.
They're the best part of Spain to visit, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, get away from the crowds.
But hasn't the euro devalued? You know, it's so expensive over there now.
It has. It used to be. Yeah, the days are long gone when it used to be a cheap night out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So you went over there with the kids?
Went with the kids, Santa Teresa.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Excellent. Because recently, of course, we were at your wedding. Was it last? Is it more than a year ago now?
Yes, it was the 7th of the 7th, 07.
Of course it was. 7-7-07, yeah. Excellent.
That's a year now. Some people said it wouldn't last.
Really? Well, there you go. Just you've proved them wrong. And of course, I hope you don't mind me saying, John, but, you know, you inherited there. Inherited is the right word. Two young kids.
Oh, yes. I'm no spring chicken, but Kieran's 10 and Olivia's 14, and it's just fantastic.
They must keep you on your toes.
Certainly do, but feel like a taxi service all the time.
Now, you were telling me just recently you invited me to something that they were involved in. What was that again? Just remind us.
Oh, yes, at the Royal Court.
Which I couldn't get to. I was away, or was something else was in the diary. Yeah.
Yes, they played Mowgli and Bagheera in Jungle Book. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. When the video comes out, I'll give you a copy.
So they've a couple of showbiz people in the making there?
Well, I think so. I think so.
Excellent. Of course, your own background, John, just let's talk about it briefly. You originally were a school teacher, weren't you?
I was, yes. Yeah. I was just a sports fanatic. Hated school, really. I loved school, but I hated schoolwork. And so I wasted all my time. But I was playing in a band. I was playing football. Ball, very high standard. And so what did you do in those days? You became a PE teacher.
And what made you go down that road, though? Was that something that you felt you had a calling for?
Absolutely not. My A-levels weren't good enough to get to university, and people just said, go and teach kids. So
It wasn't that second option route, was it? You know, not good enough to get into university. Well, what can I do? I'll go and train to be a teacher.
Well, you were a teacher, weren't you?
I was, but I didn't. I went in to be a teacher because I wanted to be a teacher. So,
oh, I didn't. I just had very few other options, really.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. So where did you train? Where did they have PE courses?
Right? Edgehill, yes.
Yeah.
Which was great, not far away.
Yeah.
University now.
Of course it is, yeah.
And I taught in Liverpool at West Derby and at Speak Comp.
Of course, the old Speak Comp, I think that's gone now, is it?
Yes, it's Parklands now.
Right, yes, yeah. Renamed. It's on a new location, isn't it?
It is, yes, near the Morrisons.
So, of course, I would imagine teaching in those days very different to teaching today.
I don't know if I would have the stomach to teach today with all the bureaucracy and all the rules and regulations. When I think about the fun we used to have and the risks, the calculated risks we used to take, but I felt it was good to challenge young people, particularly those that perhaps come from more disadvantaged or poorer backgrounds. And nowadays, you know, I used to do gymnastic shows. I wouldn't be able to get away with it these days.
Because of the change in the rules and things. And
all that, yes, and taking kids away, you know, the bureaucracy.
So what sort of things did you used to do, though, when you say take them away? Where did you used to take them into Wales?
Lots of North Wales, canoeing, camping, Snowdon. It was wonderful. I got more job satisfaction out of being a PE teacher than anything. But, Dean, you know, after you've taught for 4 or 5 years, you're doing the same thing over and over again, aren't you? And I felt I needed a different challenge, a different stimulus.
Yeah. We'll come on to that. My special guest this hour, John Hollis Davis, just talking about his first career as a school teacher. Breaking news, you'll be pleased to hear, Kim Hughes and our very own Richard Maddock, our station boss, are safe and sound. They're on terra firma after abseiling down the side of the Royal Liverpool University Hospital building there. So good on them. They're down safe and sound. That's the main thing. And I'm sure they'll be counting up the pennies and seeing how much they've raised for the Linda McCartney Centre. So good on them. good on them. Congratulations from everyone here at City Talk 105.9. Yes, so John, we're just talking there about your early days as a teacher going into Wales. I mean, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and we were talking about, is it Loggerheads?
Yes, Colomendy.
Loggerheads. I used to go, I went a few times when I was at school and loved every minute of it.
Oh, yes. Every half term, every holiday, I'd take kids away in those days. Yeah.
And what sort of, did you, was it in particular kids who maybe were socially deprived or whatever?
Well, two lots, really. I used to take the younger ones away just so that they could leave the speaker state. And then, of course, people, older pupils, 14, 15, 16, who'd opted to do PE, I used to take them on outdoor pursuits activities from Colomendy, but we used to go camping and we used to go climbing and canoeing and all sorts of stuff.
And how long were you in teaching for then?
13 years.
Right. And what sort of propelled you to sort of change your direction?
Well, I needed a new challenge, so I moved into training.
Right.
And that was at a place, when we had the old Merseyside County Council, they had a place called Metel. And we used to provide different type of training to the traditional further education. It was more flexible and painting, decorating, all sorts of stuff like that. And I provided quite a lot of training for... There was a government initiative, I think it was called the Community... It was community work, and there were a lot of people recruited from Toxteth who were unemployed and who were paid for 3 days a week to do things like set the cobbles in the Albert Dock when they were starting to reclaim that. And then for 2 days, I'd try and give them the training in IT and painting, decorating, building. And it was quite a revolutionary idea in those days.
So it was more vocational based?
Absolutely, yes.
And what sort of people were coming onto the courses then?
A lot of people were from the black community, but there were all people who were long, long term unemployed, and you know, unemployment was bad in those days. So it was an initiative. I think it changed my thinking a little bit, because you call me a social entrepreneur and a social activist. Well, I've never looked at myself like that, but I think I inherited from my mum a passion for challenging wrongs in society. And I thought, you know, I think there still is racism in the city, and it was one way that I could help, if you like, to provide employment or training opportunities to very disadvantaged people in our city.
So were you actually using positive discrimination, that old label?
No. I don't know what my feelings are on that, because it would be wrong to give someone a job because of the colour of their skin. But I always remember that the Labour Party in Wales didn't have many women. So, and because women make up 50% of the population, they started to make sure that there were 50% women, 50%... male. Now, I don't know really what I think about that, but the outcome is that there are far more female MPs, and that seemed rather a good model to me.
It's interesting when you look at things like that, John, because I was listening to something on the radio. I don't know whether it was here on City Talk or whether it was Radio 4. I think it was actually Duncan Barker's show this morning, talking about, you know, the possibility that there could well be a black president of the United States of America come the end of the year, after they've had their elections in November. And the question was being posed, you know, will a time ever come when we'll have a black prime minister? But somebody, I think, rang into the show, or sent a text into the show, making a very interesting point, which was, what's the colour of the skin got to do with it? So long as you've got the best person to do the job.
Absolutely.
Isn't that what you're looking for?
Absolutely. But I do think there are injustices. If you look at how difficult it is for females or for black people to get to the very top in any profession, they are underrepresented. I suppose you could argue, though, who'd have thought that we'd have ever had a female prime minister in this country? And I think that's a similar sort of analogy.
And we forget as well, you know... She's not in the dim and distant past, but it's 11, 12 years since we did have a female prime minister. So that was quite unique in those days.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So do you think we're talking about racism? Let's just stick with that, John, if you don't mind, because I know throughout your career you've come across a lot of that, as it were. Do you think it's sort of nowadays almost brushed under the carpet in as much as people are not as open with it all now, but they're doing it in sort of underhand ways?
Yes, but before I pick that one, I have to say, I don't think there's as much racism around as there was, certainly in my youth and even 10 years ago. I think it's a lot better. You've only got to walk around the city centre and you see far more diversity in the city centre. We never used to have that, right? However, I think with all the political correctness, the offensive words and actions that used to be out in the open are now insidious, and there are undercurrents.
A lot more subtle.
Absolutely. And I think, therefore, where there is racism, it's harder to spot and therefore harder to deal with.
And therefore more dangerous as well.
Yes. I mean, I was listening to a programme on a rival station of yours.
You're allowed.
It was on the BBC, Radio 5, and they were talking about the stop and search initiatives by the police to tackle gun and knife crime. And all the black people that came on were claiming discrimination and racism within the police force. And, of course, the police force was saying, no, there isn't. Statistically, there are reasons. But I think there, it's very difficult to unpick and see if there is actually institutionalised racism in a big organisation.
Do you think here in Liverpool, John, over the years, over the many, many years, that we've sort of built up our own problems as far as racism is concerned, because, you know, we've almost created ghetto areas around the city?
Yeah, I mean, historically, I know that black community think that that was planned that way. I don't know. I feel exceptionally safe walking around Granby, Toxteth, and I love the diversity there. And I do think a lot of black people like living in that area because they're with similar people to themselves from different backgrounds and so on. I think it's in the more heavily white areas where you do see the more obvious racism.
So it's definitely still a problem out there, isn't it?
I think so. I think you've only got to look at employment rates as one indicator of how people's prejudices, and this all comes from slavery. You know, you can still see it. And then you've got the horrible instances of racial attacks and even murders, like the Anthony Walker.
Now, how can you counteract all of this, though? Where does the solution lie, do you think, John, in your opinion? Is there a solution? Will there ever be one?
I don't know. Not in our lifetime, certainly. But, I mean, you look at G. Walker, you know, she's the Nelson Mandela of our city, in my opinion. And she speaks such common sense and has such forgiveness for the most heinous of crimes that possibly our city's ever seen. And she's a leader. And she's an inspiration, I think, to black and white. It is about harmony, but most of all, it's about tackling the ignorance that's still around, and we do that through education and explanation.
I'm talking to my special guest this hour in conversation with John Hollis Davis. Just mentioning G. Walker, as you did there, John. I also was talking about Melanie and Stephen, and you know their loss. And what comes out of these things. And it's amazing, isn't it? You know, it's like Colin and Wendy Parry, that out of terrible tragedy and adversity, sometimes can come some absolutely wonderful, positive things.
Oh,
if you look at the Peace Centre out in Warrington that, you know, Colin and Wendy are responsible for because of, you know, where the focus of their life went after their son had been murdered.
Yes.
It's very interesting, that, isn't it?
It certainly is, and in a way, I feel that here in Liverpool, in Merseyside, I think we have a special gift, or it's in our character, to support each other against adversity like that. I mean, I've not been to the Peace Centre, but I've heard Colin speak several times, and he's an absolute inspiration.
And yet before that tragedy, he'd never done anything like that in his life, would never even have contemplated it.
No. He's another leader.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Interesting then. So you've done a lot of work during your career in the Liverpool 8 area, haven't you? The Granby Studio that you mentioned with Fonz there. How did you first get involved down there?
Through sport. Basketball.
Right.
And I met a great pal of mine. In 1969, I started a basketball team called Liverpool Ajax. And a great man from the black community called Jimmy Rogers in 1968 started what became, it was called Liverpool ATAC and evolved eventually to become Toxteth Tigers. And his team were mainly black, my team were mainly white. And there was fierce rivalry and great friendship. And we used to play for each other's teams if we played nationally. And that was my first meeting with that community. And then over the years, we've just got closer and closer. And I found myself out of work about 5 years ago, and I was a trustee of Toxteth Tigers, so I went and worked with them, and we did some great
just
stuff.
Just tell us about them then, because they've got an interesting, fascinating story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Henry Mooney's the inspiration. He was there at the first ever training session, and now it's a model of community involvement that's replicated in other parts of the country now. And it tackles injustice, poverty, gun crime, racism, all the things that are in the community, and tackles them through sport and cultural activities, mainly basketball, but also tennis, and been involved in boxing and things like that.
Excellent. So, talking to my special guest this hour in conversation with John Hollis Davis, you're listening to City Talk 105.9.
City Sport. On Saturday, Everton welcome Portsmouth to Goodison.
Arteta tries it towards goal.
Yes! Brilliantly struck by Mikel Arteta.
And Tranmere host Northampton in League One.
Corran's got a chance to shoot. He's done just that. It's 1-0 to Tranmere.
Then on Sunday, Liverpool take on Aston Villa.
Deep cross towards Cal.
Yes!
They needed a hero on the night, and Cal was just that man.
With full live commentary and the best post-match analysis. City Sport.
Built-in Kitchen Appliances is the UK's largest independent appliance showroom.
It's everything for your kitchen, all under one very big roof.
With over 2,000 freestanding and built-in appliances on show, including sinks, taps and more, we stock the biggest names in kitchen appliances, including Rangemaster, Maytag, Hotpoint, Stoves, Miele and more.
Call into Belmont Road, Anfield, or visit built-inappliances.net.
Big names, big savings, big showroom. Built-in Kitchen Appliances.
Digital camera, £300. Laptop, £800. Mobile and MP3 player, £200. The contents of your wallet, your bank account details, your family. Priceless doesn't cover it. But an intruder alarm from DynoSecure might. With DynoSecure, you could beat the burglar from as little as £5 a week. We've maintenance contracts and police response alarms available. Call DynoSecure now on 0800 121 999. DynoSecure. Why wait till it's too late?
My dad's van's better than your dad's van.
Well, my dad's is blue.
My dad's van's a Fitzcudo, International Van of the Year 2008. Now with an improved 120,000-mile third-year dealer warranty like all Fiat vans. And finance offers start from £29.99 per week.
Mum! Fiat Professional, commercial vehicles built on years of experience. Text Fiat vans to 8800 or visit fiatprofessional.co.uk/range.
My dad's van's better off by miles.
Business users only, initial rental required, payable in monthly instalments, exclusive of VAT.
Your choice of legends in the evening on City Talk 105.9. City Sport, including legends John Aldridge.
It's Johnny Aldridge again, 2-1.
Ian St John, Ian Snowden, and new signing Graham Sharp.
What a goal by Graham Sharp, an important one for Everton.
KFC drives you home on Radio City 96.7. On Magic 1548, the legends of the 60s, 70s and more. Your only choice of legends in the evening. Radio City, Magic and City Talk 105.9. The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
It's not far off 25 past 2, The Sullivan Show, with me, Dean Sullivan, on City Talk 105.9. Something for everyone, of course, from 7 o'clock tonight. City Sport, going to be looking back at Liverpool's late show against Standard Liège last night, which put them into the Champions League group stages. We'll hear from Rafa and bring you all the news from the draw for the group stages. Also hear from Everton new boy Lars Jacobsen. and we'll bring you the latest from the Firefighter Games. That's all on City Sport with you from 7. Between 8 and 9, Olympic bronze medalist David Price is going to be joining Peter McDowell and Nick Peace for Fight Night. He'll be chatting about his experiences in Beijing and his appearance at Anfield last night. And it was great to see him on the front of the Daily Post there, towering above those two players from Liverpool FC. And between 9 and 10, then it's the final hour. It's going to be a match of my life. Peter is in conversation with Everton legend Alan Harper. He talks about his time at Liverpool, his successful time at Everton, and his career and his playing days ended, and how they all did end. So that's all on City Sports from 7 tonight. Peter Price with you from 10. Going to be a night of the unexplained with his special guest in the studio, James Griffin. Roy Basnett takes you through the wee small hours of the morning. His regular features, Beyond the Dark and A Scouser in New York. Phil and Kim back with you on The Breakfast Show from 6. Kim safely down off after her abseiling off the top of the Royal Liverpool University Hospital building there in town. And her and Richard, our boss, abseiling for a great cause, of course, Linda McCartney Centre. Anyway, Kim and Phil back with you on The Breakfast Show from 6. Duncan Barks from 9. Tomorrow he's going to be talking about quiet Sundays. Do you miss quiet Sundays? And he's asking the question, where have all the airships gone? Don't know why. I don't know where they've gone. Where have they gone? Didn't know we had any. City Surgery, Phil Cooper covering tomorrow from 12 o'clock. And then from 1, of course, you're back with me, The Sullivan Show. So like I say, something for everyone here on City Talk 105.9.
In conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
My special guest in conversation with this hour. We do this every Thursday. We just kick off our shoes, put our feet up, get a cup of tea, have a leisurely chat. My special guest this week, John Hollis Davis. John, we were just talking there about touching upon racism and other social ills, and you were talking about basketball. How, in you know, when you formed this basketball team and you got involved down in the Granby area, how did you use the sport then to sort of tackle some of these problems? How did it work?
Well, first of all, by having support systems, lots of single parent families and so on, lots of tensions and unemployment. So it was about having role models that were inspirations to young people to make the right choices in life and not go around the you know, the drug using and the drug dealing routes.
So success in sport, success in that particular sport would, I suppose, it would encourage confidence, self-confidence.
Yeah. Not only self-confidence, yes, but the inspiration to go into further and higher education or to get a decent job or to find employment within the community or within sport. This was all part of the package. There was always an end product. It's not just the sport as the end product. It's much bigger than that.
It's everything that comes with it, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
And also, there must have been many occasions when they had that spirit of representing their community as a team.
Well, let me tell you about that. Henry Mooney made a great decision. Remember the riots and the way that the UK's media branded everything that was bad about Liverpool as Toxteth, and it was synonymous with poverty and gangland and criminality and black issues. So it was a very negative word, because it was always Liverpool in their 80s in my youth. Do you remember that?
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Henry called renamed the basketball club, not Liverpool ATAC, but called it Toxteth Tigers, so that there would always be a positive slant on the word Toxteth. And, of course, they became national champions, and so good was coming out of Toxteth, being recognised for being good, to try and change negative stereotyping.
And were they able to take that back to the community?
Oh,
you know,
I
the community
so.
Would have been behind them, surely, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you can still see it today. The legacy is that we've now got professional basketball called Everton Tigers. Now, they played in the arena in front of 6,000 people last season. And this year, I think they'll be battling for honours to win the league.
Excellent. So how did Everton get involved then?
About 3 years ago, Everton was suffering from perceptions of racism within their club and within their following. And working in Toxteth, I knew that all the young black lads were wearing Arsenal shirts or Thierry Henry shirts. you know, lack of role models. And so I was helping them with others to tackle the perceptions of racism. And then pure inspiration, I think it was in December 2006, it just struck me, there's no racism or sexism or ageism within basketball. And it's a very, basketball's a very urban type sport that all sectors of society buy into, and it comes with its clothing, its music, its swagger, its self-confidence, and it's managed and officiated and run by people of all colours. And I thought, if you had a professional basketball team, you'd change the perceptions of racism within the club overnight. And sure as eggs, that's what has happened.
And created a positive force.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've got the Olympics in 2012. We've got one of the top basketball teams in the UK here. The Great Britain team's getting stronger. So, you know, and we've got this wonderful Echo Arena. I think that we're on the road to, first of all, getting into Europe and playing at a much higher level, and ultimately support the GB team in 2012.
You mentioned the arena there. What's your take on what's going on in Liverpool at the moment as far as regeneration and rejuvenation is concerned?
Oh, I came down on Monday to the Matthew Street Festival and the World Firefighter Games opening, and I'm so excited by what's gone on. You walk through town and there's something new on every corner, every skyline. There are cranes, there are new buildings, there are new roads. It's so stimulating. I took the kids over to New Brighton about 6 weeks ago, and I'd never looked at Liverpool from your side of the water. Mm. And I thought, my God, that's my city. And I looked over, and we didn't just have the three iconic buildings down there. Well, I know they get some criticism in some quarters, but we've now got a city that's becoming more international, looking more prosperous, and the skyline is absolutely amazing, and it gave me a big, big buzz.
Excellent, excellent. Do you feel, though, that it radiates out from the city centre as well? Or do you feel that maybe on the outskirts some people are feeling maybe a little bit excluded, or it's not part of their, you know, their heritage and their sort of perception of what's going on?
I'm not going to answer the question straight away. I'm going to say that if you look at Manchester, which today it's been recognised as being the happiest place in the UK, along with the place in Gwent, right? Look at the prosperity within that city and the buoyancy. And that came on the back of an IRA bomb that ruined the city centre, on a failed bid for the Olympics that started a regeneration programme to get all the infrastructure in place. And you could ask the same question about Manchester, but certainly Manchester's the place to go if you want to go to a modern, vibrant city. I think we've copied them here, using Capital of Culture, using the new Liverpool One, the new arena, and I think that if it hasn't stimulated the outskirts of the city yet, I think it will permeate through in the longer term, because I think it will generate more income and drive up the GDP within the city.
And that can only mean that we all benefit.
Absolutely. And I suppose we can measure that by the lack of unemployment, the number of jobs there are, the new firms coming in, the population rising again, because we've got the infrastructure for nearly 1 million people and we're only half full. Mm. You know, so it would be nice if we could attract more people here.
And the city centre is becoming a place to attract people as well.
Oh, it's such a
bringing
buzz.
Them back in, because, of course, you'll remember many years ago, as I did, you know, it was almost deliberate council policy to get people out of the city centre.
Yes,
you know?
And now where did they go? For their churches, for their schooling, for all the doctor's surgeries, yes? So all that went, now that it's coming back again.
But it's, you know, as we said, you know, everyone will benefit from it in the end. And the great thing about, I think it was mentioned this the other day, on the Tuesday after the Matthew Street Festival, because I went down there as well, I was absolutely amazed, absolutely the biggest and the best, and it was great. And then I was walking through town on the Tuesday morning coming to town and got the ferry over. And I was amazed at, A, that everything had gone. The crowds were not there, obviously. But all the stages and the hamburger bars and all those things, the portable loos that they put out onto the streets, they'd all been gone and cleared overnight. But also, all the streets were clean.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was. But they were cleaning.
And you think that was a massive, massive clear-up operation during the night? Must have been.
Absolutely. But it was going on during the day as well. People going round with the cleaners and people picking up the rubbish. I mean, that's just a simple decision to do that. I know it costs money, but the image of the city is so much better for it.
You've always been proud to be from Liverpool.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I've hardly ever moved away from here.
I was going to say, even though the, you know, we went through, you mentioned it briefly before, you know, the, almost those dark days. I saw a clip from the Boys from the Black stuff that they showed on a series that was on last week about Liverpool. And it was a scene where there was one of the dockers was in a wheelchair and he was being pushed along by another one. And it was down the Albert Dock and it pulled away. It was a shot that pulled back and pulled back and pulled back. So that you saw the Albert Dock where now we've got the Tate Gallery and those lovely shops and those apartments. And it was derelict.
Yes.
All the windows were smashed. It looked like a bomb had hit it. Well, a bomb had hit it on the corner, and that was still as it was from the war. And it was just extraordinary to look at that black, bleak picture and to think how far we've come.
Yes. I mean, they were the bad old days. We didn't keep our eye on the ball. I go back to Manchester again. The city fathers there must have had far more insight because we had an airport the same time as them and ours was bigger than theirs and they've got the best airport outside of London now and all the business that brings. And why did we let them build the Manchester Ship Canal and take our port traffic away and containerisation? Well, why didn't we try and keep ahead of the game? And I think that the culture is changing and we're not feeling sorry for ourselves in quite the same way as we used to. And we're fighting back and we're fighting back in a way that I think will... I think we are the renaissance city within the UK. I think Manchester's had its peak. I think Leeds has. And I think we are now the place to come. Talk to some of the firefighters in our city. They are absolutely bowled over by the friendship, by the architecture, by the activities, by the warmth. It makes you proud, doesn't it?
It does, and they've come from all over the world, 3,000 of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Where do you think the future lies for Liverpool, John, do you think?
I think that we've got the biggest economic base outside London here in the northwest. I think we need to be embracing Manchester far more and tackling the rest of the UK, Europe and the world in a more united manner. And I think that's the way to go forward.
Because many years, just to go back to that black, bleak period that I mentioned there, you know, we were very much, I think, we very much felt that we were just on our own and neglected and almost chastised by the rest of the country. And that's turned around now, hasn't it?
I think so. There's still lingering attitudes, though, aren't there? You still see it, that chip on the shoulder and no one's as hard done to as us sort of thing. But I think we're tackling that now and I do think there's more optimism and hope for the future.
And it's a better... It's becoming a better place to invest in, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Well, how much money was put into the Liverpool One? And that was all private sector involvement.
And one of that was, I think, the biggest retail and leisure development in Europe.
Absolutely.
Ever built. So,
yes.
You know, it says a lot for Liverpool, doesn't it, when you get a company like Grosvenor, who say they are willing, obviously, to work in partnership with the council, but are willing to actually invest so much money, as you said quite rightly, John, privately. Well, you know, do they know something we don't know?
Absolutely. Remember, in the bad old days, the only investment was in schemes. And that was it, a scheme on every corner.
Well, please God, they're in the past.
Absolutely. But you and I both come from Speak, don't we?
Indeed, yeah, indeed.
I lived in one of the... one of those, like, cardboard prefabs that were built after the war.
Yeah, on the outskirts there.
That's right,
yes.
Right by the airport.
I remember those as a child, yes.
Yeah,
I remember those.
Yeah, yeah, but you had a brick-built house.
We had
yeah?
a brick-built one, yes. We had a couple. We lived in Keithley Walk first and then Western Avenue, and then my mum still lives in Vicott Road. But, no, I remember those prefabs. Interesting, because they were only supposed to go up, weren't they, for... only meant to last for 12 months or
Absolutely.
2 years, and they were there 40 years later.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Yeah. So what about growing up in Speke, John? What was that like as a child? Have a happy childhood?
I don't really think so. I just grew up and I didn't... I was very close to my mum. You're close to your mum, aren't you? I was very close to my mum. She was an inspiration to me. Very loving, jolly person.
Brothers and sisters?
Yes, one of each, yes.
And your dad, what did your dad do?
Dad worked as an accountant in one of the firms in Speke, yeah. Yeah.
And did you go to school there as well?
Yeah, Stockton Wood. You went there?
No, not Stockton Wood. My sister went to Stockton Wood. I went to Alderwood, down to the other end, because
right.
we lived down that end at first.
Stockton Wood was the biggest primary school in Europe when I went there.
Amazing.
Massive.
How many? There must have been hundreds of pupils there.
I don't know. It just seemed enormous to me in my youth. We moved out of Speke when I was 8. Yeah, moved to Mossley Hill then.
Right. Oh, you went up in the world. Mossley Hill.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm talking to my special guest this hour in conversation with John Hollis Davis. You're listening to The Sullivan Show with me, Dean Sullivan, here on City Talk 105.9.
City of the Stars. Hi, this is Alex Belfield, and you can join me this Sunday afternoon from 1 for City of the Stars. This Sunday, Stars.
Little Britain's David Walliams and Matt Lucas.
When we started, we were sort of performing at midnight in Edinburgh to a load of drunken people, and it was really outrageous and rude then.
And Noel Edmonds.
When you are successful and when you're high profile, there are elements of the media that want to have a go at you.
City of the Stars, Sunday afternoon at 1 on City Talk 105.9.
Store and Pound Stretcher bring you the Crunch Bunch. Offers under orders to make your money go further. Kit the kids out for less with Back to School skirts from $179. Sweatshirts only $169. Student diaries $149. And polo shirts an incredible 99p. Don't miss the pick of the bunch. March on down to In-Store and Pound Stretcher, Hunts Cross, Bromborough, Prescott and Highton.
By investing millions of pounds in brand new centres for learning, Knowsley Council is changing education for everyone in Knowsley.
Well, it's definitely going to be a good change. A lot of new technology is going to be there. It's the first time Knowsley's been given something like this, and Knowsley deserves it.
More than just buildings, more than just schools, these centres for learning will inspire, excite, and challenge everyone who uses them.
It'll be a lot better because it gets you prepared for when you're older.
Find out more. Visit knowsley.gov. UK or call 443-2700.
Homeowners like me and you deserve a great deal on our double glazing, but why risk calling wibbly wobbly windows on shifty drafty lane when you could call the professionals? At SafeStyle UK right now, if you buy the windows and doors for the front of your house, they'll give you the back absolutely free. Restrictions may apply, and they'll fit them free too. There's flexible monthly payments to suit you, and their free K-Glass can cut heat loss, saving energy and saving you money. Don't go wibbly-wobbly. Call the professionals. Call SafeStyle UK now for your free quotation on 0800 106 107.
Thursdays are alive after 5 in Liverpool City Centre.
We're Trend Locator Whitechapel, and we're now open tonight for late night shopping. Remember, every Thursday the shops are all open till late, so come join us tonight.
Thursdays are alive after 5 with the Business Improvement District, creating a cleaner, safer, vibrant city centre. And City Talk 105.9.
In conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
It's not far off 3:15. You're listening to The Sullivan Show here on City Talk 105.9. Still to come, of course, after 3 o'clock, we get out of the studio into the City Cafe at the top of the tower, catching up on all the entertainment and showbiz news with Ali McBride and the sister of the fifth Beatle, that was Stuart Sutcliffe. He met John Lennon when they were both at art college in the very, very early days. Well, his sister is going to be popping into the cafe to talk about a fantastic exhibition of Stuart's artwork taking place in the Liverpool City Centre at the Victoria Gallery, which is up on Brownlow Hill. Just had £8.5 million spent on it by Liverpool University, so we'll be talking about that and other things, of course. That's all to come on the cafe. But this hour, talking to my special guest in conversation with John Hollis Davis. Of course, John, we both met quite a few years ago now through the Social Partnership.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Well,
charity.
The Social Partnership was quite revolutionary, really, in tackling drug and alcohol addiction, in that basically we formed a college and gave them activities and access to training that they'd always been denied before.
Because it was always they were always almost excluded, weren't they, from...
Oh, absolutely. They
any of those opportunities?
Just give them needle exchange and just give them methadone, and that was about it. But this was a real attempt for the first time in the UK to try and treat them as human beings and get them back into society. Because if you do the economics of it all, it costs about £100,000 a year to maintain an addict, if you take into account all the healthcare, the policing, the court time, the value of shoplifting and burglaries and so on, it's much better if we can give them the skills so and get them off the drugs so they can get back into jobs.
And did you not find that when these sort of people were given those opportunities that they responded to them because those sort of opportunities had not been there before?
It's a lot better now, I have to say. But in those days, we were visited from all over Europe and the States because of what we were doing. It was brand new. And a lot of people, I'd like to think, were saved because we had a good staff there. And a lot of people stopped using drugs or were able to control their drug use so that they could go out to work or they could get their families back together, they recovered their health and so on. That was quite an exciting time, that.
And of course, you did have some people who were there who actually then became involved with the partnership as well.
Oh, absolutely.
In as much as, they started teaching themselves.
That's right. And a lot of recovered drug users actually got trained up to become drug workers, which was quite a clever way of getting people back into employment.
And who used to back that then? Who funded it, John?
Oh, we had a cocktail of funding, but I got money from central government, local government, from grants and different charities and some local industry, like Royal and Sun Alliance, were very good with us.
And what sort of people used to actually use it as a service?
People have been... the profile is usually mainly male, over 30, 15 to 20 years of heroin addiction and other drugs. So they were who the customers were. But we got... government ministers came up to have a look at it. In the year 2000, I spoke at the Labour Party conference about getting people who were long-term unemployed back in to fill the gaps in the labour market. And what I'd done, in partnership with Royal Sun Alliance, call centres was the big growth industry in Merseyside at the time, and they couldn't get enough people to fill all the vacancies. And yet I was seeing thousands of drug users all claiming that they wanted to get off the drugs and get into employment, but being denied that because of prejudice and so on. The Royal Insurance Social Partnership and a training provider dealt with the drug use and getting people ready for work. Training provider gave them the skills to access the industry, and the Royal and Sun Alliance with other firms actually to give them tasters and then employment. So that was quite revolutionary again back in late 90s.
And as you say, that was, a new turn of events, really. And then I suppose it just sort of rolled out throughout the rest of the country.
Yes, the idea that you know drug users are not just to be written off and become an underclass, but they can be integrated into society again, and I think that that message is now adopted in most agencies around.
Well, I was going to say, it must have you know, seeing a gear shift in as far as policies were concerned, government policies were concerned, because now, of course, we're all quite used to the notion that, you know, everybody should be getting back into work. You know, what is the notion of disabled? You must be able to do something.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, offer that back into society.
You've hit the nail on the head. But I can remember you, we invited you to become patron and be a sort of leader and advocate on our behalf, and you used to talk quite passionately about the drug use and a drugs organisation over in Ireland that you were involved in, and also when Jimmy Corkill went through drug addiction, and you were able to relate you know, your actor's experience to real life experiences through your involvement with drugs organisations.
But of course, as I used to say, John, as you know, I always used to make the point at the end of the day, I was only acting it, you know, and I was coming across through, you know, the social partnership and working with you, and the charity you mentioned in Ireland, which is called Breakthrough, and they built a fantastic centre over there for young people, drop-in centre for young people. You know, I was coming across people who were actually living this nightmare, and trying to desperately, so many of them desperately wanted to get back, get their lives on track and get back and to be, you know, giving something back rather than being a hindrance and a drain on society.
Absolutely, and I mean, you and I share similar ideals about all that. That's why we've been pals for so long.
Absolutely. Just to change the subject, because I know that you have a passion for this as well, the Common Purpose. We've heard of lots of people around the city who've been engaged with Common Purpose. Just tell us a little bit about it, John. What is it?
Right, Common Purpose. It's something on its own, really. It's not a training program or a management development. It's a leadership opportunity. And I don't know how I got involved, but it's the best thing, sort of work-related, that I've ever experienced in my life. And in 2003, I was fortunate enough to go onto the national program and went down and met government ministers, and we had people from all over the world. And going back now, 2003, and the big message from I went on that program was China was going to be the new superpower. And we had video links over to China, and then we've just seen the quality of the games, and wow. Chinese are coming.
Someone was actually saying on the programme the other day, the days of, you know, looking to the United States of America for, you know, leadership as far as whatever policy is concerned are over now. It's China that's where the eyes of the world are looking to.
Absolutely. And weren't the Beijing Games fantastic? And GB did so well.
Yeah.
You know, the feel-good factor. You mentioned the prize, the boxer, before. I mean, it's just great, isn't it? But the whole of the country is bouncing on the back of the 16 days.
Absolutely.
Over in China.
So the actual idea behind Common Purpose, you mentioned there, John, leadership. What is it doing then? Training the leaders of tomorrow, or...?
Or letting the leaders of tomorrow gain the skills through being exposed to the top leaders around and the top speakers and the top institutes that are around, and understanding the democratic process and then the legacy of the courses or programs you go on, it is that you've got this network then of people in all walks of life and leaders throughout the country. And again, I'm proud to come from Liverpool, because the Merseyside and Lancashire Common Purpose, it is the biggest and most vibrant in the whole country.
So is it something that once you've done it, been on the course, for want of a better word, I know it's not a course, program even, that once you've done that, you're engaged with it forevermore?
I think so, yes. I mean, we're lucky we've got a guy called Ken Pye, a very flamboyant, energetic person here, and he's quite an inspiration. He makes sure that we have access to the networks, that we are invited to different functions and so on throughout the year, and there's access, of course, through the internet as well.
So what are the sort of people do you come across when you're engaged on this programme? And where are they drawn from?
Oh.
Industry? The arts?
All sectors of the community. I mean, you can have leaders who... A nurse might be a leader, but she might be a leader in what her field is. And it's not about just the Warren Bradleys and the people at the top of the tree. It's people who have leadership skills. And we see people with leadership skills in all walks of life. Henry Mooney, for instance, who I mentioned at the start of the show, involved in Toxteth Tigers and Everton Tigers. All of the time that I worked with him, he was unemployed. He didn't receive a penny. But what a leader within that community. Absolutely priceless.
Are leaders born, or can you mould a leader?
I think they're born. I do. And I think that leadership is... It's a difficult concept because everyone's frightened to make mistakes. But unless you try and do things... only if you try and do things will you make mistakes. So people who don't try and do things... We always are frightened now. You hear this word, partnership, partnership, partnership. Where are the leaders that come through that? Where's the Alan Sugars that take us forward, or the Richard Branstons who will put their neck on the line and take us forward?
Well, the best leaders, don't they? Aren't they always the ones who learn from the mistakes they make?
I hope so, because there's no one in this country ever learned to ride a bicycle without falling off.
Absolutely, that's a very good analogy to use, actually, John. So what's coming up in the future for you?
Well, I'm coming to see your Terry Across the Mersey tonight.
Ah, you are indeed, yes.
Yes. So
our little trailer showing, yes.
I'm looking forward to that. I don't get out very much. Yes. All right. So looking forward to getting home, see the wife. Yeah. And
what do you do to children? Relax then, John?
Play with the children most of the time, and we're going away this weekend. We're just going to North Wales, stay in a caravan for 2 or 3 days.
If you're looking back on your career so far and your life so far, you know, and still a long way to go, of course, you know, and you had to write down in a diary, you know, the 5 or 6 highlights of your life so far, what sort of things come to mind immediately?
Oh, my goodness. Well, number one, having my own children. Number two, getting married to Teresa and taking 2 stepchildren. But playing football for England, captain Great Britain at handball, spoke at the Labour Party conference in 2003, making changes in government strategy to deal with drug and alcohol abuse, creating... national projects that are still in operation now, tackling unemployment, tackling disadvantage. And, of course, the last one that I'm really proud of is to have created Everton Tigers for this city.
Excellent, excellent. That's a great career so far. And, John, you know, you talked there, your obvious passion and your love for your wife and for your children and for your stepchildren. If you were giving those children, you know, one bit of advice, what would it be? Just one bit of advice.
Oh, I was going to say be happy, but I don't know how to quantify that. One piece of advice...